Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 489, Annabelle, Welcome Home.
My kids would be like, oh, thanks, Dad.
She did say, she goes, why am I named after a movie? And I was like, dude, you were born before the movie came out. She was like, oh, that's right.
Yeah. She's just lucky her name like isn't Hulk.
Yeah. Well, considering the other one is Gwen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I was one for two.
So you named her after the dead girlfriend?
Yeah, she's the better one. Let's be honest. Everybody likes Gwen more than Mary Jane.
Well, that's because she's dead.
That's true, yeah.
And
you mourn her more.
And you romanticize her, and she doesn't have to get older and do crappy things.
That's true,
right?
Yeah.
She's frozen in time.
Just don't date anybody named Peter.
Right.
If I can offer you any advice in your future romantic
You want to keep your daughter as far away from Peter's as possible.
All the time. Without question.
He's like, why did I bring up my daughter on this cesspool of a podcast?
At least we didn't bring her up last week. Like, we were on a roll last week.
Oh, okay. I was like, I don't remember it either.
We were talking about, like, werewolves and...
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right, yeah.
And in the middle of the podcast, Kevin out, this is getting edited out, right?
Yeah. And then it didn't.
Now, that's the advantage of him being lazy. It doesn't get taken out.
Yeah, we can kind of say almost whatever we want.
Yes, and since he's on vacation, he won't be editing this one, which means he will hear none of this.
Yeah, this will be all
none
new. He'll have to tune in.
We can say all sorts of things.
We really could.
Like, Kevin, we've never liked you.
Yeah.
Like, it's like,
no, we know you took the money for the vacation,
right? Yes, we know the Patreon money all went to your Disney World vacation. We know that now. Like, we'll just say scandalous things about him.
Yeah and then he'll listen to it and be like, no, wait, you'll have to go on Twitter and quickly do damage control.
This is not true. Kevin, we know you love the movie Labor Day.
Oh, we do. He actually, when I bought my copy of Monster Squad, he begged for me to buy him a second one.
Just to know that a second one had been sold.
You
somewhere.
Son of a bitch.
If you search KB Pie Lover 314, that is the name under which he's writing all of his Labor Day, of his Labor Day. I'll call it fan fiction.
Sure.
I don't want to embarrass him by calling it slash fiction.
Sure, it's pie fiction.
Yeah, some of those pies are cream filled.
Right,
let's just leave it at that.
Still hung up on KB Pie Lover.
And that's his letterbox.
And it's they're not Hostess cream pies.
No.
Right? Like, they're
homemade.
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 Homemade. Homemade. So
these are salty.
Yes.
Did you ever see Van Wilder?
Oh yeah, a million years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
The cannoli
scene. So gross.
Yeah. I don't even remember.
Oh, I've tasted this before.
So we should probably go around the table and introduce ourselves.
This is Brad.
This is Joe.
And this is Tom. In case you couldn't pick up on it, Kevin's not here this week, which is why we did our scene of Kevin's a dirtbag. Yeah.
So that should be our outro song, is the teenage
dirtbag.
Yeah. By Wheatus, is that right?
Yeah, that's Wheatus. Yeah.
Yeah, Wheatus, yeah. Where was that? Oh, shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on iTunes. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe. It helps us tremendously, which is why we beg for it every week. You can also join the League of Show Sharers at facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, share an episode, and if you have your privacy settings configured just right, in other words, if you're not trying to hide from the TSA or the NSA.
All of the essays.
I don't think the TSA's been... Yeah.
No, they don't do anything anyway.
Don't blame it on the essays. They've had enough trouble.
They went above and beyond and get out, though.
Yeah. People who were kind enough to share the show this week: Ralph Tribble, Librarian Cynthia, Griffin Fox Smith, Susan Carlson, Travis Tewitt, Tom Kaminsky, Zara Vandercreek, Tammy Sherman Powers, Chris Magic Man, Ron Johnson, Laura Connolly Quiddick, Lane LeVanway, and Julianne Jordan. So thank you very much for sharing the show.
Weird. Did Brad show?
I forgot to share.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And here you are sitting here.
I was late listening to it. I always share it after I listen.
See how you are. So yeah, if you want to be cool, unlike Brad,
deserve that.
You can share the show and we'll read your name. So thank you.
Bam.
For the people that do that week after week, we really do appreciate it. We're skipping box office this week because there were two pretty big movies. So,
they were, yeah.
So I guess let's just dig into Annabelle, Welcome Home.
This is such a weird... I don't mean... It's not weird. Like, James Wan has created this unintentional world. Like, I don't think this was the intention.
No.
When the first Conjuring came out...
One of the ways you can tell it wasn't the intention is how forced all of the spinoffs have been. This is... I mean, so, like, in TV, there used to be this concept called the backdoor pilot, which sounds dirty.
No.
But sadly, it's not. And... it's when the producers of a show would basically, to absorb the cost of producing a pilot and increase the likelihood of it developing an audience and getting picked up, shoehorn it into another show.
Uh-huh.
So, like, if you ever wondered, like, why is the cast of Welcome Back, Kotter suddenly visiting an inn in New Hampshire with all different people? That's why. And so, like, you see this a lot. So there was an episode of the Brady Bunch where all of a sudden the new family moves in next door, and there's like Ken Berry, and then they've adopted three kids, and they have a black kid, a white kid, and an Asian kid.
Yeah.
And like the whole episode of the Brady Bunch is about them. Like, the Bradys are in the opening segment and the closing segment, and that's it.
Did that get spun off?
They tried, but it didn't work. All right. You'll also see it in... there's an episode of Cheers where Carla goes to the Tortellis, and the whole episode's about the Tortellis.
And that doesn't go anywhere.
That did get spun off, but it failed. But it got spun off into a show called The Tortellis, her ex-husband, Nick Tortelli.
Yeah. But Frasier got his own show. I guess that was an accident, though.
What was it? I mean, when Cheers ended, they created a new show for him, but it did not backdoor pilot on Cheers.
Sure, sure, sure.
Shows that were successful backdoor pilots. I mean, Mork showed up on Happy Days.
Yeah. The Jeffersons?
The Jeffersons. I don't know if it was a true backdoor pilot, but those characters started there. But Facts of Life on Different Strokes. So,
oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, because it started with, that's the school that Philip Drummond's daughter went to. That was the boarding school she went to. So there's an episode of Different Strokes where they go to, I think, was it Leland? They go to Leland, and you see all the characters, and Arnold's running around, and him and Tootie are cracking wise.
Crazy Tootie.
But on the pilot of Facts of Life, like, they bring them back on. They wanted to jumpstart, like, hey, you love Different Strokes. Well, they're going to be on this new show called Facts of Life.
I gotcha.
Watch the pilot, and then, yeah.
Huh.
And they did, there's another one that failed with them. Well, it got spun off, but it didn't work. But Hello, Larry, which is kind of famous for being a really bad TV show, began as a backdoor pilot on Different Strokes.
Would you consider Mama's Family a backdoor pilot or a skit that got spun off?
I would consider it a skit that got spun off. Like, a backdoor pilot is when they insert it with the intention of creating a spinoff.
That was just something that was very popular.
And so they turned it into a TV show. Yeah.
Which I loved.
Yeah. There aren't very many sketches that have been turned into TV shows.
Movies,
but that's not sketches. SNL. Like, the only sketch that comes to mind is The Honeymooners.
That was a sketch?
That began as a sketch on the Jackie Gleason show.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, there's your walk down TV memory lane.
Now,
but like
James Wan.
But that's what, to me, that's what The Conjuring is doing. And there's a scene in this movie where all of a sudden they start rattling off, like, I'm like, damn, that bitch just dropped five new franchises on us.
So basically, just to give you the breakdown, in The Conjuring, they introduced the Annabelle doll.
Yep.
Annabelle gets spun off into three separate movies.
Now, I will say, I think Annabelle is organic. Like, I don't think
that's probably true.
I don't think they put Annabelle in that movie with the thought of spinning off other movies.
No,
I think that was just the opening scene for The Conjuring. That movie was a big giant hit. People reacted to that scene to very
doll,
well.
Talking about the doll.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were like, well, here's a way to make sequels without having to pay the original cast. Let's do, that.
Do that.
But everything since then,
yes.
the nun and the priest and La Llorona, and that's all just
So The Conjuring introduces Annabelle. Annabelle gets three movies. And then The Conjuring 2.
For now.
Yeah.
The Conjuring 2 introduces the nun. The nun gets her own movie.
The Crooked Man.
That's coming.
That's still being made. Yeah.
So two from that one. Yeah. And then the Curse of La Llorona, which I guess is just the priest. Like, there's no other connection to the Warrens or anything besides that priest who was in one of the movies.
I think the connection is it's got the same gaffer.
Well, to Annabelle's credit, it has been the same writer. Like, the same writer has written 1, 2, and 3, and then he directed this one.
Boy, that guy got lucky.
No kidding.
I mean, after the first one, they let him write a second one.
The second one's way better.
Yeah, remember? The second one's great.
Well, let's not go crazy.
Okay. But, well,
I really enjoy the second one. I enjoy this one.
The first one was awful. The second one was very much... Because the first one wasn't about the doll.
No.
And I'm just like, what are we doing here?
Right.
You know? And then the second one was like, okay... This is better.
Right.
This one was, and I realized I think I got the name wrong in the opening. I called it Welcome Home. It's Annabelle Comes Home.
Yeah.
But man, this movie was a snooze.
I dug it. I was all about, like,
the last,
I was off and on.
The last 15 minutes, 20 minutes, like, they finally did stuff. But the first hour of this movie is like, maybe we're going to scare you. Maybe we're going to scare you. Maybe we're going to scare you.
Yeah.
No, we're not going to scare you.
Yeah. So, like, I compared this to, you know, those action flicks where the action.
Where there's no action?
Where the action set pieces are really the only thing you care about.
Yeah.
And the story is just there to get you to the next beat.
Yeah, they've written three action set pieces, and then the connective tissue
just
is
whatever.
Like,
yeah. That's what this movie is.
Yeah, except there's only one, and it's at the very end.
I don't know. Like, I was into it. Like, for whatever reason, this thing just worked. This is basically The Conjuring 2.5.
Yeah.
Like, it opens with the opening scene of the first Conjuring with...
Which is the fifth time we've seen this now.
That is very true.
I can just sing along with it.
But it's interesting because they don't cut it off.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's the scene with the nurse. The nurses were like, this thing keeps coming back. The Warrens are like, look, this doll is not possessed, but it is a conduit to get you possessed by something else. Okay, cool. What are we going to do with it? Well, we'll just take it home. And that's how this movie starts. Like, usually it cuts it off. But we get to see the backstory where they just take it home, they bless it, and things
thrill to the exciting action of watching a doll ride in a car.
I did like this.
America's been clamoring
for. So what I thought this was going to be a road movie of them trying to get to the house with all of this crap following them. Trying to get into the, like, that's what I thought this was going to do.
That would have been great.
That's how it started.
I thought for a minute, and then I was like, there's no way they paid these two
to make
a whole movie.
So you see them a lot in the promotional material. I was like, man, they're in this thing a lot.
Yes.
And then they're not.
Yeah.
It was very,
they're
very tricky.
Yes, they are.
It's definitely like opening, closing, like the Bradys when the multiracial family moved next door.
Yes, correct.
It's identical to that. I think it even takes place in the same year.
Is that right?
I don't know, but it's the 70s. I don't know what year did The Conjuring take place.
I don't remember.
Because it's the 70s.
It is the 70s.
Yeah.
Maybe in the 60s, because the Amityville, I think, is in the 60s. And I'm pretty sure that this happened, like, the first Conjuring is set before Amityville.
I thought you guys might know from that comic book shot in the grocery store.
That was great.
Yeah.
That was some detective. I saw that one. And the
Conjuring The Conjuring takes place in 1971.
Okay.
So, yes, it would be taking place at the same time as the Brady Bunch.
They're just copying the same thing. It's the same story.
So there.
But yeah, so the whole opening scene is you've got Ed and Lorraine, which of course is Vera Farmiga and
Patrick Wilson.
Thank you, Patrick Wilson. And they're doing the same. It's funny, like, I have to detach myself from the real life Warrens because they're scumbags.
Yeah.
Like, they're carnies, they're liars, they're, you know, all of it. So for me, like, I have to let that go because these two actors who are fantastic, like, they're great together.
In the context of the movie, I like the Warrens a lot.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think what really set the tone for me liking the Warrens was in the very first Conjuring movie.
Yeah.
When they're investigating something
Oh, they call bull.
Yeah, and they're like, no, this is, you're not haunted.
Right.
Like, here's what's going on.
You got
like,
a creaky pipe over
here.
You
got a leaky pipe, and it's doing this, and the wood's expanding, or whatever they said. I'm totally making stuff up, but if I got it right, it's only accidentally. But I love the fact that like they did this whole scene where you think it's going to be scary or something's going to happen, and then they're like, nope. There's a rational explanation for all of this. Have a nice day.
And the real life Warrens would have been like, no, you're haunted. Pay us money and we'll make you famous.
Let's talk about the Warrens house for a second. Holy crap balls. These guys have to be loaded.
Yeah.
It's 1971.
It's a double layer.
Yeah, it's a two-story house. These sons of bitches have a microwave oven.
Yep.
And a refrigerator.
Yep.
With its own water and ice dispenser in 1971.
When did those start becoming a thing?
I have no idea. Like, I think we got our first one with a water dispenser built in. I want to say it was like the early 80s. I'm not trying to be like
humble brag.
Yeah. But like, just to give you a perspective, I was the first kid whose household had cable.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
Whose dad would turn on the AC in June.
Ooh.
You know, late June, but still June.
My dad's rule was nothing until Memorial Day.
Yeah.
And then maybe, depending on what the weather was like on Memorial Day.
Right. I feel like we were kind of early adopters of that kind of stuff. I was the first kid with an Atari. Like, ooh. I, you know, that was a big deal. Like, I'm not trying to be like,
no, I get it.
I feel douchey, but I'm just trying to say that, like, you know, because it could be like, well, maybe your family was just too cheap. Like, no, they would get that stuff.
Right.
And so I'm like, that fridge, that's a baller fridge. And it was a side-by-side, too, I think.
Was it?
I'm trying to remember.
It may have been.
Maybe it wasn't. But it was definitely had water and ice dispenser.
It's so funny.
And they had a microwave.
Didn't
yeah, that's something
it.
I wouldn't notice.
And
that's
also funny. Their linoleum floor was identical to the one we had growing up. That's apropos of nothing.
Maybe that was just, wasn't that just kind of the style could have been?
I mean, there probably weren't
I
a whole.
I felt like I'd seen the floor before.
There weren't a whole host of choices.
That yellow and brown swirly floor.
Yeah. But we didn't have it.
No, so, I get it. But yeah, so like to Tom's point, you walk in the main level and it's just a basic kitchen, dining room, living room, what, you know.
The first microwave came out in 1967.
So they had it a year.
Yeah. This is from the Wikipedia for microwave oven. After Sharp introduced the low-cost microwave ovens affordable for residential use in the late 70s, their use spread into commercial and residential kitchens around the world. So
late 70s.
They weren't considered affordable until the late 70s. And just to really stress about this microwave, okay, and for the younger crowd out there, this is what happens when you become a homeowner. It's an above the range microwave.
That is, I did not.
Like,
yes,
like when people first started getting microwaves, you just bought the one that you shoved over on your counter.
Yeah,
like
I still have. That's what I have.
Yeah, and like to an above the range microwave in 1971. Whoa.
There has been plenty of talk. I mean, the Warrens, they made people famous and they made stories famous. They were front and center on all kinds of stuff. And I do actually like that they addressed the fact that they were hoaxes.
Yeah.
You know, that they got called out on, I think it was Donahue.
Yeah, I think
like,
that's
right. Called them out and like, can I put Mr. Warren on Front Street? So, like, yeah, it's tough because this version of the Warrens are your heroes and you want to get behind them. When in real life, they were scumbags.
Right.
So, yeah. So, the whole movie opens. Ed and Lorraine are driving back with Annabelle in the back seat. The fog starts to roll. It's funny because we talked about in The Nun how they doubled down on, like, the 1930s kind of feel of, like, the Universal Monsters with, like, the gothic castles and the fog and the whatever.
Yeah.
They do that again with this one. And I was like, yeah, let's do that again because I liked that part of The Nun. Like, that was a fun little throwback for The Nun.
That's also fits the time frame.
It does.
So, like,
I agree. If this is, like, something out of a thriller video.
Yeah, like, yeah, well, yeah, when that's exactly what I thought. When he's stuck on the road and he lowers the hood, he, like, slams the hood down and there's all the, like, the people the behind him.
My
first thought was, like, thriller.
Yeah, I know. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So we know that Lorraine is a medium, and with Annabelle in the back seat, she actually hears the voice say, I like your doll, which is super creepy. They go back to using the mirror to see what's actually behind them. And from this car accident from earlier, we see the spirit of this woman who died, and Lorraine's is kind of like, look, I'm sorry, like, you were killed, and she was like, okay, and poof, she's gone.
Yeah.
But then, like, you see in the graveyard that they're next to you, shockingly enough, somehow they stopped right in front of a graveyard.
And a graveyard, like, right, like, if you, like, told someone to draw a graveyard with the cast iron gate.
I felt like they zoomed in on the name. of like the, you know, blah 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 cemetery, and I was like, well, I should probably remember that.
Oh, you missed another spinoff, man.
I did. I know.
St. Mary's.
It was something like that. So I was just like, well, I wonder if that was in the nun, or what was the name of the monastery they were at, or the nunnery. And then you see all of these ghosts,
right?
You know,
it's like Oprah. You get a spinoff, and you get a spinoff.
That's not until we get to the house.
They fake you out though too, because she holds up the map against like.
That was a good fake out. I enjoyed that.
I don't mind a good fake out. Yeah. Not everything that's building to a jump scare should be a jump scare.
Yeah.
Or the jump scares won't work. So like when I complain about the lack of jump scares, and I'm not a fan of them anyway, but when I complain about the lack of them in the first hour of this movie,
I mean, I guess it didn't feel like that to me, but I get
it. Sure felt like that to me.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, to Brad's point, like she's holding up, they're trying to figure out where they're going, and they're holding up this map, and of course she's holding it up. It's so big and it covers the entire passenger side window. I was like,
here we go.
Okay, like I get it. I know what we're doing. And then
man, when I saw that microwave, I was surprised they didn't have GPS.
They've got their own TomTom.
Yeah, get it straight from DARPA.
We're the Warrens. Like we get one of those. It's our right. So they end up going home, and the doll kind of is messing with Judy, their daughter, who I don't think is the same girl.
I don't think so either.
She looks familiar.
Maybe I've seen her.
She does look familiar. Yeah. I know that the girl that plays the babysitter.
Seen her too.
She's Bethany from Jumanji.
Okay. Yeah.
She's the, you know, the self-absorbed girl.
Yeah.
Jack Black. Yeah.
It's so weird. No, she played Jack Black.
Oh, totally.
Todd Blonde is Jack Black.
Totally. What was I thinking?
Yes.
They get it home, and then they not really exercise it, but they bless it. And then it was so crazy where Patrick Wilson is just kind of like, hey, do we still have that tempered glass from that church they were going to tear down? And they were just like, yeah. It's like, cool, let's use that. And yes, I was like, of course you have tempered holy glass left around. That's the story I want to see is like them just collecting artifacts like Indiana Jones.
I know, like that's. Yeah,
that should be three.
Yeah.
There's so many artifacts that we get visuals of in this movie that they could do that in some regard. Have we seen the monkey before?
I think the monkey has been.
It's
been a while.
The monkey caught my eye because like there's a Stephen King
monkey shines
with a monkey like that in the cover.
That's a bad movie.
Yeah.
But we see the box from the first Conjuring because they give you no timeline. Right, so we know that
they say 1 year later after the opening scene.
Oh, they do.
So
don't
you
they?
Know it's 1 year after The Conjuring.
Okay, that's what I was trying to figure out. Since they have that box,
so it's 1972.
Okay, so we get.
I think that's also how they get around the recasting of the daughter.
Oh, that makes sense. Because I felt like the daughter was like little in the first Conjuring. Like she looked fairly like like four or five.
Well, she couldn't have been that much littler.
This girl was definitely. Maybe she's just a more seasoned actor. You know what I mean?
She was played by Sterling Gerrans in the first one.
Okay.
But you would have to recast that role.
Sure.
It's been 6 years.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. You know, like you
this kid's driving now.
Right. Totally. So like you would have to
I think they did
a pretty good job recasting it.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
and she was good. I liked her.
And I also thought they did a good job of communicating that she's the daughter, like the way they transitioned from a scene with the old actress to the new actress, that you can kind of see that she's supposed to have had a growth spurt, but you also know that you're still looking at the same character.
Right.
Like I thought they handled that very effectively.
Yeah, I would agree. So and this girl is the Judy, the daughter, has the same talents as her mom.
Yeah.
So she sees and I thought this was super, like, one of the things that The Conjuring has always, the whole series has always been really good about is keeping things behind your main characters, but keeping them out of focus so you can't see how gross they are.
Yeah.
Right? So you've got, she sees this priest who has died. She sees him around the school grounds, but he's just far enough in the distance where you can't make out his face, but you know that there's a being there.
Yeah.
They do that in the second one when the girl is possessed by the old man, when she's doing like the voice or whatever.
Yeah.
Also complete bull. Like that was the girl made it up the entire time. But you can start to see the thing come up from behind her.
Yeah.
But then it goes away. So I appreciate that they kind of stuck with that because this one looks the most like The Conjuring.
Yes, I would
agree.
This
one looks like visually it looks just like those other two movies. Judy's picked on by these kids and the only kid. This had definitely had like a Halloween vibe to it. Where the babysitter and the little Tommy Doyle and the boogeyman and blah, blah, blah. So the babysitter is going to come over, and the Warrens are leaving, I guess, to go to Amityville.
Oh, I didn't think about where they were going.
They're leaving.
Yeah, they went somewhere.
I don't know that they ever truly said, although they implied at the end of The Conjuring 2 that the next one would be Amityville.
No, Conjuring 1.
Is that what it was?
Yeah,
they showed that house? Okay.
We have to go to...
Okay.
So in Conjuring 2, they're in Amityville. Like, that's where that movie starts.
Okay.
Is in Amityville. They can't call it that.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
But at the end of the first one, Vera Farmiga kind of says, we have a call for a house in New Jersey. And that's Amityville.
That's Amityville. Okay. Yeah.
And that's the thing is, like, the movie you don't make another Amityville movie. Make a movie about the DeFeos. That's the movie that I think is the most interesting.
I would be interested in seeing an Amityville movie from the point of view of the Conjuring universe.
I would definitely see it, but yeah. I think the like, to me, that story has been told and it's been debunked.
Yeah,
like the whatever their names were have said, like, nope, totally made all that stuff up.
Yeah,
the story that is more interesting is that DeFeo murders, because like Ronnie DeFeo is walking from room to room murdering everybody in their sleep with a rifle and nobody gets up. To me, if I hear that first shot,
yeah,
I'm getting up.
I guess you're deep sleepers.
Sure. Well, they are now.
Yeah. Didn't they cover that in one of these movies?
No. I mean, there's Amityville. There's the... So they did Amityville with James... What's the dad's name? What's
Brolin?
James Brolin?
I thought we saw
And Margot Kidder.
Brolin.
Sorry. Yeah, right. And then they remade it in like 2004 with Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
Which was good.
But I watched one recently, I thought was when I was preparing for The Nun or whatever, the last one of these movies I saw. But I don't have a big recollection of these movies, but I thought it was one of these where I saw the guy going around shooting with
may have seen like bits and pieces of that in one of these Conjuring movies.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, the Warrens are leaving, the babysitter is coming to stay at the house, and of course her friend Annie Brackett, if you will, from Halloween. It's not this Kevin Brackett, but
no relation.
She kind of like wants to get in the house and wants to check it out. Like, we know what the Warrens are into.
Yeah,
the
news story. Yeah,
the article has come out, so she wants to get in the house and she wants to check it out. Again, responsible babysitter says, you're out of your mind. No.
Yeah.
And then we get not Ben Tramer to come over to the house and, you know, big ball.
Bob's got balls.
Yeah. I got to tell you, is a hilarious running gag. I thought that was hilarious. When everybody just keep calling him, the kid just like, oh, God. Yeah. Yep. That's me. That's but then like the payoff for that joke at the very end.
Yeah.
With Ed Warren. I was like, all right. The payoff worked.
Yeah.
When he has to fight a goddamn hellhound. Because that's in this movie. Like, that is the point where
CG
I was like, God, you almost had it, but then you went just far enough with this weird misty hellhound that it almost ruined it for me. That's something out of Supernatural. Like, that's what that is. That's out of the TV show.
I didn't care about that bit at all. And the fact that, like, one of the things that drives me nuts is when they introduce a character with asthma, but they're never responsible enough to have their inhaler on them. So the sole purpose of her leaving it in the car was so she could go out there
with asthma. I'm like, oh, gee, this inhaler won't go missing later.
Not at all. Yeah. We won't have a problem with this later.
Yeah.
The friend comes over, and of course, everything's going fairly well. And then the babysitter, the friend, and the daughter go into Ed's office. And this is the scene that Tom was talking about. I was like, oh, these are our new franchises.
Yeah.
So we've got the ferryman, which is, you know, this thing. We've got the bride's dress. I think you see the nun in the background. I think that picture...
I was looking for her. I never saw that
picture is up hanging up on a wall somewhere.
Okay.
And then the hellhound. So you've got like four, well, three, because we've already got the nun.
Yeah, it's like a seek and find of spinoffs.
And I don't think that Annabelle...
I heard that they're actually spinning off a scary version of Waldo from this movie.
I don't think it'd be insane to get a spinoff from a spinoff.
It happens.
What do you mean it happens? When does a spinoff of a spinoff become a thing?
Sure, and television all the time. Technically, Happy Days is a spinoff
of another spinoff.
So Happy Days is a spinoff of Love American Style.
Okay.
So that means everything that's spun off of Happy Days is a spinoff of a spinoff. So Mork and Mindy, Laverne and Shirley. Mork and Mindy had a spinoff.
They did?
With an angel. It was like Mork and Mindy, but with an angel. And it only lasted like 6 episodes. So that makes it a spinoff of a spinoff of a spinoff.
Yeah. Twice removed.
Yeah. And then I'm trying to think, because there were, Joni Loves Chocolate. There was that spinoff.
Crazy.
Of Happy Days.
Yeah,
Happy Days had quite a few spinoffs, and then
Joey loves Chachi,
and then Archie Bunker are all in the family, right?
Oh,
Jefferson spun off of that,
yeah,
and then Florence had a spinoff called Checking In, where she was manager of the housekeeping of a hotel.
Right.
That actress, Marla Gibbs, was smart enough to write into her contract. She didn't want to do a spinoff.
Oh.
And she's like, she had it written into her contract. If this gets canceled, Florence gets to come back to work for the Jeffersons. And it lasted like 4 episodes. And they had recast her role with a new actress playing a new character.
Oh.
And then they like... they brought her right back.
Yeah, you go right back to where we liked you.
And it also started as a backdoor pilot. And then Good Times is a spinoff of Maud, which was a spinoff of All in the Family.
Man, that's okay. Yeah. Right on. That makes sense. But this is in this movie world.
Yeah.
This is the first, if we don't see a Ferryman movie, I would be shocked.
Yes.
That's the one they double down on.
Yes. Clearly that is the priority of spinoffs of the ones that were cataloged for us.
I liked it.
It's like a menu.
It's like a menu.
Which one would you like?
I like the one with the coins on
it. I almost expect him to put up a thing along the bottom of the screen, tweet your vote.
Which one you like the most?
Hashtag Ferryman. Hashtag Bride.
Hellhound.
Yeah.
So they do. They go through all the cases and we see the ferryman. And the ferryman, I guess, his last victim looks just like our babysitter.
Yeah.
And then the Warrens are gone at this point. You get them in like the first half hour, maybe 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And they come back at the end. Which when they come back at the end, they're just like, hey, guys, what's going on? And everybody's like, you are not going to believe the bullshit we had to put up with while you guys were gone.
Well, we didn't even hear them tell them that. They said to each other, we have to tell them everything. And then you hear them upstairs being like, hey. Yeah. And then it cuts.
Right.
And that was probably just somebody else's voice off screen. Like,
yeah, it wasn't them. Sure.
I would have liked the idea of them not saying a word.
That's what I would have liked.
That would have been a great ending for me. If they came home and they're like,
how was your weekend?
Everything's cool.
Great.
No big deal.
Happy birthday, Judy.
Yeah.
It just seemed like such a weird transition, though, that we understand that they're going to tell them everything. And then it cuts to her birthday, which is however many days later. Or whatever, and everything's okay. After everything we just saw, there was no
unleashed hell in this house.
You're no longer our babysitter. Right.
Yeah. It almost felt like none of this ever happened. It was just we're moving on to the birthday and closing off the movie. And
right. No, we should say there's nothing post credits. Like this is not, they don't do that in these movies. So the friend comes over, starts snooping around, gives Judy roller skates. The babysitter's like, okay, I'm going to take this kid roller skating, but I swear to Christ, if you just sit here and watch the cake, that's all you have to do is just do that.
That's cooking.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. Right. Yes. Yeah, so they're cooking her. They're cooking Judy a cake.
Just stare at this pastry. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Don't move. Just look at it longingly, but don't eat it.
Given her desire to be in the house already, she had to have known, she's going to do
this. What are you doing?
Don't leave this girl in the house.
She has moments of competency, and then other moments where I'm like, oh, my God, you're an idiot.
Your kids aren't teenagers yet.
That's true. Yeah. We're just you'll be all right. Oh,
I promise
you
won't. It's the single most realistic aspect of this film.
So they leave, and, of course, the best friend kind of rummages through and ends up...
Jesus shows her the keys.
He does, yeah. Well, she leans against the door, and she was like, if there's anybody in there, give me a sign that I can get in here. I don't know if she goes back into the... Either way, she goes into the office, and this picture falls down of Jesus.
No, she's rooting through the desk.
Oh, that's right.
And
that's right.
And then there's
she
like
tells
a,
Jesus
there's
not
like
to
a
judge her.
Framed picture of Jesus on the desk.
Yeah.
And she's like, don't judge me. And she pulls it down.
And there are the keys.
The keys are behind it.
So she goes in, and this is where we find out that she's looking to reconnect with her father who has passed away.
Yeah. Yeah. Which this was, I feel like, a missed opportunity from a writing standpoint because her father died in a car crash.
That was technically her fault.
Okay. The movie begins with the Warrens having to turn around because of a car crash.
Yep.
But it wasn't her car crash.
That's a good point.
Like, how great would it have been to
How do
make,
we know it's not, though?
Because it's a girl.
Because you see
a dead girl in the back seat.
Yeah.
And so...
Whoops.
Yeah. So, how great would it have been if it turned out that it was Annabelle who caused the car crash
that killed
her dad? And that, you know what I mean?
So then she can use the dad to... enter whatever.
That's what you call good writing.
Which is weird because this guy, I feel like he is consistent. I don't remember not hating the first Annabelle. I was like, all right.
I did not like the first one at all.
Does that one end?
The one where it has nothing to do with Annabelle.
But does that one end or begin with the Manson family? Is that one begins with the Manson family, right?
I think it ends with
like a riff on them.
Yeah.
Creation cuts back into...
the end of creation is when it retroactively
it like retro
fixes itself
fits that yeah. from the first
and says
one.
That
yeah.
the daughter spoilers for Annabelle 2 is the which we did an episode on by the way the young daughter is the grown up kid at the end at the beginning.
Right.
Yes, okay.
Like they were trying to be like, see, it was about Annabelle.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, that's in the second one where they're just like, oh no, he died at the end of the first
one.
No,
like, no, look, let's see, the first one's better now.
Right. And it does kind of make the first one a little bit better.
No. No, all it doesn't. Right.
Fair
no.
enough. All right.
I thought it I didn't go back and watch the first one because I watched them back to back, and after seeing the second one, I'm like, okay, like together I appreciated them a lot more than I did when I just watched the first one.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's funny, like Gary Doberman. So he wrote, man, this guy's got a hell of a writing credit. So he wrote Swamp Thing, the DC Universe show, which is great. Unfortunately, it's been canceled already. Yeah,
After the first episode. Every time I see an ad for it in my Facebook feed, I'm like, but you canceled it.
Why am I going
to
watch it?
And why are you bothering to advertise
right,
it? You've already bailed on it.
Yeah. But that's a James Wan production. So this, yeah, obviously he's a James Wan guy. So he wrote Annabelle Comes Home. He wrote The Nun. He wrote It. He wrote Annabelle Creation, which is the second one. And then he wrote the first Annabelle.
Did he write it, or was he a writer on it? Didn't it go through quite a few different versions?
Oh, no, it says screenplay by.
But if you go to it itself, it's probably going to show you more than just
Let's find out.
Because
oh, there's a lot.
Yeah, because it was going to be direct. Who was going to direct it? Somebody else?
Cary Fukunawa.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I think that they ended up like taking that script and retooling it. So,
oh, that makes sense.
Like, there's a lot of hands
Three.
On that script.
It's Chase Palmer, Cary Fukunawa, and Gary Doberman.
Okay.
Gotcha.
So, like, the guy has...
Yeah, there's some decent stuff in there.
Well, he's also... He knows this story.
Right.
You know? And I felt like this one is just like, let's just throw some jump scares in there. And apparently Tom...
And then eventually they decided to.
Right. So the best friend goes into the room, and this is where we see the wedding dress, which is a cool little scene where you think it's going to move, but it doesn't. This random suit of samurai armor. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a spinoff. That's a spinoff.
Yeah. Forgot about that one.
Because they talk about it.
Yeah.
They talk about why it's there.
Yeah. Though. Capture the Asian market.
Yes. Can we get an Asian ghost in here? No? Okay.
I guess China won't let you release movies about ghosts, right?
Is it China or Japan?
It's China.
Oh, yeah. I guess that makes sense because
Japan's a free society.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. J-horror was that big thing in like the 99, 2000, 2001.
Right, and they were never about ghosts. And then like...
Oh, no, they were like the Ring and the Con...
But I thought it was... Oh, the J-horror. Yeah. But like I know Ghostbusters, they had to come up with some other way to release it in China. They had another reason for what they were hunting.
Ectoplasm smashers.
Yeah.
Which I just listened... Did you know what the original title for Ghostbusters was going to be?
I do, and I'm blanking on it.
Ghost Smashers.
Okay, that's not what I was
thinking. Yeah, so like last podcast on the left just did like a mini episode with Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you want to hear a boatload of crazy.
Oh, yeah, he believes all the paranormal stuff.
All of it.
Yeah.
He believes he...
Every bit of it.
He had this, I guess, like a paranormal show. I don't know if it was on Sci-Fi or whatever.
I think it was in first-run syndication on like late-night television on Sundays.
He's like, I walked out and there were two guys standing outside and they were bald and dressed all in denim. And then the next day my show was canceled and they were Men in Black. And I was like, whoa.
Or men
nobody
in denim.
Was watching your show.
Yeah, nobody cared about
it. I mean, I'm glad you have Crystal Skull Vodka to double down on and this new Ghostbusters movie coming out, apparently.
That this girl's going to be in. The girl that plays Judy's going to be in it.
Is that right?
Yeah, I saw it on her IMDb.
That's great. Good stuff. For her. And so is Paul Rudd.
She does a lot of stuff. She was young Tanya Harding in I, Tanya.
That's where I saw her. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Man, that was a good movie.
That was good.
What's
was
her fun. Name?
Hannah Grace.
I thought she looked like a younger version of the girl that's Sabrina the witch.
Oh, sure.
So I thought it might be her little sister, but maybe not.
That's a good show, too.
Yeah.
So she goes into the dungeon, basically, and she touches everything.
Yeah.
It's like, kid, stop touching. Like, what do you do? I mean, granted, now I have as a father, I'm like, stop touching everything. She kind of like Annabelle falls forward and bangs her head on the glass. And of course, she takes that as a sign. She opens the door. Annabelle is loose.
With the sign specifically telling you, absolutely, do not open this door.
Do not open this door. I'm going to open that door.
Yeah.
And, of course, now all hell's breaking loose in the house. Judy is seeing things all over the place. Annabelle is just wreaking havoc in the house. The fairy, like, all of these, everything is coming to life in the house. They finally come back. And I do like the line where she's like, oh, my God, what did you touch in here? And she was like, everything? No.
She plays young Sabrina on The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
There you go.
Does she? I never watched it. Oh, so, yeah. That's just a complete shot in the dark, because as I'm watching the movie, I'm like, this might be that girl's younger sister.
Yeah, she plays the young version of Sabrina.
Or maybe I subconsciously remember a preview of it and seeing her. So
that's a good show.
Yeah.
I like that show a lot.
I've been wanting to watch it.
If they do Afterlife with Archie, sign me up. Just Archie versus zombies, which is what that is. So yeah, they do the same Conjuring thing where it starts off as little stuff, you know, like the record player starts playing again or the lights flicker. And
I'm surprised they didn't have a CD player.
Ballers. Well, they had a cassette player. Yeah. CDs were a thing. Yeah, they had a digital music media already.
If they had a CD player, it wouldn't be somebody else's cursed one. It'd be their own.
Right? Yeah. And this is kind of where the horror kicks into over. This is where it's like, how many jump scares can we get? What I appreciate about these movies is they don't double down on the gore. It's just like, you know, creepy stuff running around. So the kid from the supermarket, Big Balls Bob or whatever, shows back up.
Bob's got balls.
And Bob is he's talking to somebody and they tell him that like the way to woo a girl.
That's the pizza dude.
Oh my God. Yeah. That scene, I loved it. It's out of a completely different movie.
Yeah.
And I loved every second of it, where the guy, like the stoner pizza guy, who initially I thought was a ghost, like because he's off in the distance.
Yeah.
And he's super like not in focus and he's coming up quick.
Yeah.
And
then I think he was mentally off in a distance too.
He absolutely was. I loved it. It was so funny. But this does have moments of levity. And I get why they're trying to put that in there. It's trying to like throw you off the trail.
Right.
And, you know,
well, they want to have a moment to lessen the tension that they didn't create.
Sure. But yeah, this pizza, they order pizza. The pizza guy shows up and he's like, oh, man, like you just got to woo her. And the guy's like, what?
Well, first he says you got to woo him. And he's like, wait, I mean, woo her.
And I feel like that must have been a mess up. And they're just like, just leave it in.
Yeah.
Like that. If this kid's stoned out of his mind, that makes sense. So he comes back with a guitar and starts playing a song. And this is where he's like attacked by a werewolf.
Just rolls in and this giant CGI like, beast comes in.
Yeah, and that's the one part where I was like, God dang it. Like you almost had
it. They didn't show you too much of it.
It looked like something out of Goosebumps.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
What you did see of it didn't look that good.
Didn't look that great. So we go back in the house, and at this point, the wedding dress has taken on a life of its own. This is where we get the gross puke scene. That's from the first Conjuring, where the witch that possesses Lily Taylor.
It's also from A Haunting in Connecticut.
Oh, is it?
Where they like...
Oh, kinda, yes. Yeah, you're right.
Where
you're
kind of
right.
Puke evil
spiritiness. Grossiness. Yeah. I was like, man, they're tying in this one too. Yeah. Like, all right.
But I also think that is like a paranormal thing.
It has,
they didn't
yeah.
invent that.
No, not at all.
It's almost kind of like giving them like that other movie had a ghost in it. Copycat.
Caught cheaters. So yeah, so the ghost inside the wedding dress pukes into the best friend's mouth. Now the best friend is possessed. And I do like, you know, the babysitter and Judy come running inside. She's like Dania or whatever. Daniela, that's her name. Daniela. Yep. She's like, oh, I'm upstairs. And Judy's like, nope. Don't go upstairs.
Yeah, maybe not so much.
Let's just stay down here. That's not your friend. Yeah. Like we'll just hang out down here. And I mean, this is there's really nothing more I can say other than it's just jump scare after jump scare after jump scare.
Yeah.
The deal is they have to get Annabelle back into the to the cage.
Yeah.
And then everything will go away because that the tempered holy glass is what will stop it. This
sure.
is where we see the priest that I mentioned earlier is back. And this so like they do kind of reference the I See Dead People thing without saying I See Dead People. It's their version of with great power comes great responsibility where they basically say, well, what if, you know, just like people, not all ghosts are bad.
Yeah.
So this priest, and I was like, do you
Which
really
I did. I did like that line.
Yeah. But I was like, do you want to double down on the priest not being the bad guy, given the current climate we're in? Maybe just like somebody
I didn't
else.
Think about it that way. Yeah.
So this priest kind of leads them back into the office, and we see Annabelle inside this closet.
Oh, I forgot about Annabelle's a lesbian.
I mean, it's 2019, Tom.
Well, yeah. Well, not then it wasn't.
That's true.
1972.
You don't talk about that stuff.
A doll couldn't come out of the closet like a doll can today.
That's right. It was tough.
Today, it's all like Raggedy Ann on Raggedy Ann action.
My buddy on my buddy.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
My F buddy.
I forgot to mention the was this so the game
all these dolls are now scotch guarded.
Oh, absolutely. Just, they have to be.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah. They would just be ruined.
The game that they're playing.
Feely
Mealy.
Is that a thing?
That's a real game. But it's funny you ask. I just Googled it because I Like, I mean, I'm a child of the 70s. Sure. I was born in 1970. And so, like, movies like this, I'm like, as you can tell, I'm real quick to point out, like, you know, and I had never heard of this game. And so I was wondering if it was something they made up. And it is not. It is a real game.
Okay.
And I just thought, like, I do like the way they entered what they do with this game.
Right.
I was getting mad that they didn't circle back around to it because it was yet another jump scare that wasn't meant to be.
Right.
Like when they're putting their hands in this box and then literally nothing happened.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, are you kidding me?
Right.
And so when they finally circle back around to
Did you see that it was in the room?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it shows up in
when it showed
Judy's
up later.
Room.
I was like, "Oh, that was
yeah."
Because it caught my eye. Because whenever I see a stack of board games, I always like just look,
I'm the same way. Say,
yeah.
The same way.
And I was just like, I've never heard of that one.
Right.
And then when they pulled it out, I was like, well, that's an interesting game. It seems like there'd be a finite number of things you could do with that game. Would that really exist? And sure enough, it came out in 1967.
Okay.
And it is a real game.
There it is.
Yeah.
So the premise of this game is there's items inside this box. There's four holes on either side.
Right. And you stick your hand in.
I believe
in the 80s it was rebranded as
so he's setting it up.
Yeah. Gynecologist.
Nope, you have cancer.
Yeah.
There's bumps in there.
But yeah. There's cards you have to draw, and then you have to reach into the box and find what the card shows.
This is kind of in haunted houses. They did. I remember this is a thing that we would do,
or you do it with popcorn at the movies.
That's right. Like,
but it seems so simple.
This weird cylinder object. Yeah.
How do
the
you not get a point in that game? Like, I feel like there's, like you said, there's just only a certain number of things in that box.
Yeah.
And if you have a card in front of you showing you what to get, unless you're touch sensory.
For autistic kids, that thing's got to suck.
Yeah,
or be really easy.
Or be really easy.
It's true,
Either end
right.
Yeah.
But yeah, do you remember the old, in like haunted houses, they would blindfold you and be like, it's like wet spaghetti.
Sure.
And
yeah,
like,
yeah,
which
yeah,
is
yeah.
hair, someone's skin, yeah. grapes, his eyeballs or whatever.
But that's when intestines.
Yeah, I don't know.
So either way, they get back into this room. The Annabelle's sitting, and then it goes into this closet, and then the main character has to like fight the ferryman, which I gotta tell you, this was super effective for me, at least. So like you can see the ferryman, if you don't know the story, is that when people would die back in like the 1700s and 1600s, is they would put like quarters or coins on their eyes to pay the ferryman to take their soul to the land of the dead. That's basically what this is. So all of these bodies have these coins on their eyes. And I thought it was super effective is that, like, you would see the reflection of, like, a light, and it's just the two coins.
The eye thing was cool. When she had the flashlight and was going up the body, and as she went up with the light, the body would disappear, and then she got to the top, and the eyes fell.
Yeah.
Like, that
super effective.
That was nice.
Looked really good.
It was a good gag.
And if you'd like to play Feely Mealy, you can buy it on eBay for $71.
Oh, my God.
There's only one on eBay.
Is it in the shrink wrap?
No, but it does say it's complete and in nice shape.
Mm.
It currently has 19 bids.
19 bids?
And this movie just saved somebody.
Yeah, this movie. Yeah.
And it's $25 shipping. But that's a big... The box is
also
got
to pack it tight.
Right,
so
and the box is really
it.
Big because you got to be able to put your hand
bulky.
In it.
Bulky. Yeah.
I feel like they're going to get the most money for that product on this weekend.
You know that somebody was like, what game is in that movie?
Yeah.
We've got one of those in our basement.
Yeah.
They probably just listed it this weekend, too.
Wednesday.
Got 4 days left on its...
Yeah.
On its bid, so...
This movie came out on Wednesday.
Yeah.
So... She has to walk through, like, again, very ghostly, where, like, the closet turns into, like, a hallway. So she has to walk down this hallway. And, of course, she's lined on, you know, with coffins and bodies and all this other stuff. I just thought it was a super effective scene.
When they finally, this last scene where they're in the artifact room and all hell literally is breaking loose. Like, this is a good scene.
Yeah.
And this is the only good scene in the movie.
It's so crazy. Like, it's so weird because I do think Annabelle 2 is a very effective and good movie.
Yeah.
This is, I thought it was on the level of Annabelle 2.
Yeah, I didn't.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's better than the first one just because it is at least actually about the title character.
Sure.
So, you know, they get a point for that.
Right.
But it wasted so much time to me.
I can see that.
And there were so many cool things. Like, they should have tied in that car crash.
Right.
And then it would have all been Annabelle's fault.
Right.
Like, that just seems so fitting to get her to.
Do you remember the name of the demon? Like, that's been in Malik. Annabelle the whole time. Malik, like when he shows up at the end trying to stop them
I don't know if we want to get there. I mean, we're
there. Yeah,
but like his like demonic like mannerisms, like the way he was jerking, like that was awesome. Super, I really like
high frame
that.
Rate made him move really fast.
Yeah,
and then so they even reference the nun when Daniela turns on like a reel to reel. It's the exorcism from the nun.
Yeah,
of them trying to exorcise the demon.
I like this part where like part of how they exorcise the demon is there's a film of him performing another exorcism.
That was the exorcism on Daniela.
Okay,
yeah, but that was really good.
I thought that was clever. I really liked that.
Yeah,
like, it did do some clever things with setting things up that paid off later.
Right.
That, but I think some of it is everything they set up that paid off. Kind of paid off in the last 5 minutes, and so it was like you spent a whole lot of time thinking, when did they forget about these things?
Right,
you know,
they're like the guys from Game of Thrones. Yeah, we forgot about that. Yeah, I forgot that was a thing.
Yeah, or like the Sopranos and the Russian.
Yeah, what did happen to that guy?
Yeah,
like, he's the only one that made it out of that unscathed.
Never circle back around. Yeah.
So they're in the trophy room, and there's a lot of effective stuff in this room where like Danielle is looking at a TV, and the TV is like 3 to 5 seconds ahead.
In front. Yeah.
And I was like, when they show the scene of her covered in blood, I was like, oh man, what are we going to get? Yeah, and then of course the two girls come in and stop it. Yeah. And I was like, ah, I mean, okay, fine. But I want to know what was going to happen. I want to know what was on that phone.
I really like that. That whole setup of that scene was.
Yeah. I thought that was very well done. So she takes the picture of her dad and like puts it into this bracelet that Judy earlier in the movie said, this will, it's like a conduit. It'll help you contact this one person. Of course, like this one got me where the dad is like behind her, like in the mirror you see behind her where he's just like, you know, I'm okay. And then she turns around and like half of his head is gone. And I was like, whoa,
yeah.
All right. I did not expect that.
You're like, wow, you're an even worse driver than I thought.
Yeah. What happened to your dad's face?
Yeah.
So they go in and then the exorcism from the first movie happens. That's a callback. That's that's what they're showing on the screen when Lily Taylor meets them for the first time in The Conjuring 1.
Oh, when they're given that conference or whatever.
And then in The Nun, we find out that the person that they're exorcising was like the main dude from that entire movie.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So again, these movies, this same writer from the Annabelle and The Nun, he's tying, like, I was like, that's kind of slick. Like, you're tying stuff in together.
And I think it's more effective when one person's doing it and can
plan
ahead and do these little things. Because it's one thing when you have a franchise. I mean, Marvel does it really well with all these different writers and directors and stuff and planning ahead. But, I mean, this is, like you said, James Wan creating it. And this more than one guy, but he did how many movies? And
he's done them all. The only one he didn't do is La Llorona. Like, this guy has written every other spinoff.
Yeah, so, and I think that really adds to the effectiveness of
it. Yeah, I think you're totally right.
Yeah,
so they go, they do the thing, they get Annabelle into, we see Malik, or whatever the demon is.
I think that's right.
Malik was definitely the nun.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, it's a demon.
Yeah.
So they get Annabelle in the cage, and of course Annabelle's making sure that they can't push it closed. They close it, they lock it, and everything stops.
Yep.
And then they all...
that's like, it.
And that's kind of how it ends. And poor, you know, big bald Bob is like stuck in the chicken coop.
Yeah.
You know, so I do like that he comes to the door and they were just like, he saves them from something, and then they were just like, man, Bob does have balls. Like,
yeah.
And that's the payoff for the joke. I was like, all right, right on. So yeah, the Warrens come home. I guess they tell them what happened.
Yeah,
they have this birthday party. Everybody kind of shows up, and that's kind of how it ends, with Ed singing a song on the guitar. And that's kind of how the movie ends. I know Tom obviously was not a fan.
No, I was not.
I enjoyed it.
To show you how little happens in this movie, right?
Yeah.
You love horror.
I do.
And sometimes it can be hard to reel you in, and we got to keep the show short.
That's true, yeah.
And we're at like...
an hour.
We're at like the 55-minute mark, and we're done with the movie.
That's true.
And it's not even because like you're like 60 minutes to suck.
No.
Like, it's just nothing happens.
That's about it.
And just to recap, who died?
Oh, nobody.
Nobody. Who got injured?
I mean, somebody got possessed.
Yeah. I feel like literally, when this movie ends, nothing is different than when this movie started. Yeah. Not one thing.
That's true.
Not one thing has changed.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. But to me, this felt like that action flick that's not the greatest.
Yeah.
Some good set pieces, but the story's very minimal to get you to those set pieces.
I still, and I know this is something people have talked about before, but why are these movies R-rated?
I don't know.
That's a good question.
And they make money. Like, these are not... Yeah. This one's made $38 million already.
But it would make so much more if it wasn't already.
Well, I read that... So when The Conjuring came out, they had issues where they thought they were making a PG-13 movie. That was their goal.
Oh, really?
And when they submitted it to the MPA, they gave it an R. And they asked the MPAA, they're like, well, what can we trim? And they're like, nothing. It's just too scary.
Huh.
And they're like, there's not anything we can point to.
They're not wrong.
Yeah, but they're just like, but the overall tone of the movie is so scary that people shouldn't take kids, or that kids shouldn't be allowed to go. But they're like, we can't point to any one thing and be like,
man,
well,
interesting.
There was blood, because there's no blood.
There is no blood. There's some puke.
There's no cussing.
I think there's a little cussing, but not our level cussing.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
That's your typical PG-13,
yeah,
what you can get away with normally.
Right, I mean, it's...
Some S-bombs, yeah, and maybe an F-bomb, but...
I don't even know if there's an F-bomb.
I feel like Ron Livingston... I feel like Ron Livingston, or maybe that cop, says something.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought there wasn't really much in the way of profanity at all. Because I remember at the time seeing it and being like, this is a movie you could take a kid to.
Yeah.
If your kid likes horror movies.
Sure.
If your kid doesn't like horror movies,
don't.
You will damage them irreparably. But if your kid likes horror movies,
this is right up their alley.
That's a great one to start them with, because it is scary, but there's nothing.
That's what I said about that new Scary Stories. I was like, it's like Goosebumps for teenagers.
Yeah.
Like, that's what that's going
to
be.
I'd have to really analyze it again, because I don't remember language, and I definitely remember no blood and all that, but it's weird to think that they'll rate something on a scary level and not, you know, things that make an R rating.
Right.
Gore, well, I mean, back nudity to the, and that language.
But that one is the beginning of the getting away from the torture porn.
Right.
Like, torture porn was all they were doing. Like, as horror movies were.
And, you know, the irony is you think they'd want to reward a movie like that.
Right.
By saying, like, hey, thanks for not doing these hyper-violent things.
Gutting a teenager.
And then it's like, but at the end of the day, you've limited their audience in an identical way right. as if they had, you know. Right.
But, yeah, this is kind of how it starts. Like, this one, Paranormal Activity, I guess, is kind of how it starts. And then James Wan and Scott Derrickson and all, you know, they get into like this high, I don't want to call it highbrow horror, but they get away from the gore. AJ Bowen and Adam Wingard, like all those guys are kind of like in that class where they got away from the gore. Everything's built on tension and noises that you can hear.
Yeah,
you know,
mood.
Things like mood. Exactly. Definitely like the 70s version of horror.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to think that they were just like, no, it's just too scary.
Yeah.
Hey, don't take your kids. But yeah, Annabelle, welcome home, comes home. Annabelle comes home. It's funny that we get two doll movies back to back.
You get three doll movies back to back.
Are you including Toy Story?
Yes, okay. I am.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, I'll give Child's Play credit with the marketing.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, you know, Chucky taking out the toys. And then there's another poster of him taking out Annabelle.
Oh, is
well.
There?
Yeah.
I was going to say, it would have been, well, since this came out a week later, I think it would have been funny if they did an Annabelle poster taking out Chucky in some way.
Good. Yeah, right, right.
I don't think they want to draw any attention to it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, also based on box office, Child's Play right now is at $23 million and it came out last week.
Domestic,
okay. Yeah. And Annabelle's at 31.
That's a legit franchise.
Yeah.
Like, if you can pull that in on your third installment.
Yeah.
You know, for what, $10 million?
Right.
If that, yeah. You know, I mean, like these are on the cheap.
Yeah.
Is this a Blumhouse flick? I don't remember seeing their logo.
I don't.
But I didn't get the. So. I didn't get the little credit ahead of time.
No. Yeah. I could have sworn that The Conjuring was, though.
No,
maybe it's not.
No, it's Atomic something, because I remember liking the
Atomic
thing.
Monster.
Atomic Monster.
Oh, that's James Wan.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go. Well, it says its budget was $27 to $32 million.
Wow,
that's
probably just for Farmiga.
I'm thinking it must had to be.
I bet you 15 of it is for to get those two for 20 minutes.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's a big budget.
I agree
for a haunted house movie.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, because it really the 90% of the movie takes place on one set.
Yeah,
yeah.
Huh.
I had to go.
One set
really
that they've
surprising.
Already used five times.
Yeah, right.
Is that some Donald Pleasance money? Like, how long am I on set today?
Yeah.
Or no, I guess it's probably like Marlon Brando. Like, oh, yeah, you need to pay me $10 and I'm going to be on set for a day.
You mean $10 million?
That's that too.
Yeah.
It was worth $10.
Yeah.
Can you just put my cue cards over there? I'm not going to memorize this crap.
But
I'm I'm going to call it Krypton.
I can't believe the budget for this.
That's
thing.
High.
Yeah,
that's real
either.
High.
Like I said, that's got to be going to...
Those two. And then they're doing a Conjuring 3. Like,
yeah.
That's a thing that they're working on.
Oh, so. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. What can we spin off from that?
Clearly, they have no issue milking this.
No, absolutely not. So there you go.
Oh, well, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Brad. You can find me on ReviewSTL.com.
This is Joe. You can also follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, B-U-T-T-S-21.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online at Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. You can also check out our Patreon at Patreon.com/Real Spoilers. So I guess that's it for this one. Coming up next time, we will tackle yesterday.
Yeah.
The big Beatles movie without the Beatles.
Without
the Beatles. But it does have Beatles songs.
It does.
That would be pointless.
There's
yeah, no, it would be pointless.
It would be pointless.
It would be pointless. So
songs from Wings.
Right, yeah. Them playing Maybe I'm Amazed over and over again. Yeah. Which is a great song though.
It is a good song.
So anyway, that's what you have to look forward to. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Fats orders Corky to kill Peggy.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.